The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning, a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topic
and asks what you think.
So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good to have you here. It is the 9 o'clock hour, and it is great to have you here. By the time we get to the end of the day, by the time we get to the end of an average week, it's an opportunity to take a look at stuff that we've talked about, see if there's anything else to be discerned from various things, and see if there's maybe anything that we just haven't had a chance to get to. In today's list of stuff, there is the body cam. Yep, here we go. The body cam of Officer Roy Oliver in Balt Springs, April 29th of last year. And we talk about a lot of shootings, right? We talk about the phenomenon of a lot of shootings and what we do with them. And my wish has always been on a case-by-case basis to see if a shooting appears justified or if not. If it is, and then it's everybody's job to recognize that every once in a while something really unfortunate and tragic will happen, and it will be the fault of the person who got shot. This happens frequently. Every once in a while, you'll get a shooting that is completely unwarranted. You know, the North Charleston, Walter Scott, the guy running away from the cop after a traffic stop. He drops him like a dog. Bad shooting. That was a conviction. The guy's in prison. That's the way the system works. And it should work. Amid all of this, we have had a Black Lives Matter-inspired stream of lies that has extended very ill-advisedly to some folks in the NFL and other walks of athletic life and other walks of life of varying types, that we have some huge national widespread epidemic problem of racist cops who are just rubbing their hands together with glee at the prospect of a fresh new day to go out and shoot black kids. That has always been a damnable lie. But every once in a while, is there a bad shooting? Yes. When that happens, should the wheels of justice turn? Yes. What should the charge be? That's the tricky thing we find ourselves in the case of Officer Oliver. That trial is underway right now. So I tell you what, let me just take you inside that a little bit, because we'll be keeping track of that as it moves forward. Video footage from the body cam, got to have more body cams, from the night 15-year-old Jordan Edwards was killed, shows what happened. The cops respond to this massive house party in Balt Springs. For the if you're around the east, leg of Dallas, whipping around the eastern loop of 635, you go Garland, Mesquite, and Balt Springs. Before 635 turns into 20, and the Balt Springs cops had responded a little before midnight to a big old house party. There had been a 911 complaint that there were drunken teens in the street, which there probably were. Upon arrival, they found drunken teens in the street and a whole lot of them jumping in cars and driving away. And one point on the body cam, it said like sardines in a can. They just keep coming. And so they go. The party breaks up and the officers are in the house. Roy Oliver and a fellow officer in Balt Springs named Tyler Gross. And they are in the house and they're just kind of, it's all kind of the house is now virtually empty and quite calm. And so the officers are in the house, and I'm going to pick up from there on the body cam, because what's going to happen is you're going to hear shots outside and the officers immediately run outside. And Officer Gross goes over toward a vehicle. Officer Oliver retrieves a weapon from his cruiser and runs up on a scene that what he believes is that some escaping kids are trying to run over his fellow officer, Officer Tyler Gross. And so in order to protect that fellow officer, Officer Oliver opens fire. That is his side of the story. Let me play the body cam and then tell you a little bit of what happened in court yesterday as they put Officer Gross on the stand. Oh, hang on a second. That's the lawyer. Here's body cam. There you go. There's the gunshots. Oh.
64 shots fired.
Get your ass over here.
So at this, they were just having a conversation with this high school kid who was hosting the party, and then they hear gunfire outside. Officer Gross runs out toward the gunfire. Officer Oliver runs to his squad car to grab his patrol rifle. That's him locking and loading that rifle. Officer Gross is trying to stop this Chevy Impala from leaving the scene. In that Impala was 15-year-old Jordan Edwards.
10-4, shots came around somewhere in the Shepherd area by the nursing home.
He's referring to the shots that were heard that brought both officers out of the house. They thought that were right, that was down the street. But here we go. The Officer Gross is going to be in front of that car. The car's going to move. And an officer, Oliver, thinks that they're trying to run down Officer Gross. And so he fires on the car to keep that from happening. There you go.
You all right?
Yeah, fine.
He was trying to hit you.
He was trying to hit you. All right. So yesterday, Officer Gross goes on the stand and says, I never felt threatened. Car was moving at roughly walking speed. And they asked, did you ever think about drawing your own weapon? And Officer Gross said, nope. That probably does not bode well for Officer Oliver. But does this mean that Officer Oliver is a murderer? This happened a lot in Baltimore in that case of Freddie Gray, where prosecutors seeking some peculiar type of street justice way wildly overcharged those officers, and they were all properly acquitted. Is that going to happen here? I don't know. Here's Mike Snipes, first assistant DA, with his argument about Officer Oliver.
Roy Oliver was angry. He was out of control. He was dangerous. He was stomping up and down the road. He was trigger happy. Defendant?
What? Angry? Out of control? Stomping up and down the road? Trigger happy? Let's hang on. Let's break those down. Here we go. Mike Snipes.
The defendant, Roy Oliver, was angry. He was out of control.
Angry and out of control. Is there any evidence of that? Is there any testimony to support that? Seconds earlier, they were kind of cutting up with the kid. I mean, the party was over. Everybody had largely escaped. And the officers were engaged in a very nearly jovial exchange with the teenager who was hosting the party. Angry and out of control?
He was dangerous.
Stomping up and down the road.
Stomping
up and down the road. He ran out of the... He heard gunshots. If you're a cop and you're in a house and you hear gunfire outside the house, you probably need to bust it and get out of there and double time it out to see what's going on. That's exactly what Officer Oliver did. Stomping up and down the road.
He was trigger happy. And he was completely... totally unreasonable and out of line.
He was trigger happy, unreasonable, and out of line. Now, Those are more nebulous terms. I think it is absurd for the assistant DA to say that he was angry, that he was dangerous, that he was stomping up and down the road, that, here, hang on a second.
The defendant, Roy Oliver, was angry. He was out of control. He was dangerous. He was stomping up and down.
Angry, out of control. No. However, what this is going to hinge on is, did he go to the gun too quickly? Did he go to the gunfire option too quickly? Trigger happy, that's a term that has a meaning. You know, it means you just like squeezing off rounds. That's your go-to option. Here's the thing. I don't know Officer Oliver. I don't know if there's a long, well, in fact, I know there's not a long track record of him, going to the gun with way too much eagerness, way too much gusto, way too much zest, way too much, way too high an affinity, for the option of squeezing off rounds. It appears his opinion there in the heat of the moment was that the car was trying to run over his colleague, Officer Gross. It may well be that he is quite mistaken about that. Officer Gross's testimony does not seem to corroborate that impression by Officer Oliver. But the charge is murder. And I just wonder if they have overcharged him. This was the first day yesterday of this murder trial. He's charged with murder and four counts of aggravated assault by a public servant. That they might get him on. But murder? Excuse me? That's premeditation. Malice. I don't know. I don't know from DAs these days, man. I don't know. So we'll see. We'll continue to cover this. And because this is an example of exactly what I'm talking about, using actual facts, actual testimony, and in a way, this is a fairly ideal example of how tricky things can be. In some cases, like North Charleston, South Carolina, it's obvious. That was a cop that was guilty as all get out who dropped a guy like a dog as he was running away. Ferguson is clear as a bell on the other side. The officer completely acquitted, properly so. He attacked Michael Brown because Michael Brown, or excuse me, he shot Michael Brown because Michael Brown attacked him. Don't try to grab a cop's gun. Not a good idea. Are there in between those sides of the coin really nebulous cases where cops say they saw a gun, they say they felt they were in danger? That's what they say. Do you believe it? I'm willing to believe it, but not without evidence. And in cases where there's no evidence, if there's an unsupportable shooting, I'm willing to say, hey, that's a bad shooting. That cop ought to go to jail. That's called taking things on a case-by-case basis. And in this one, did Officer Oliver go to the gun too willingly, too quickly? I don't know. I will absorb more testimony. It could be, especially with Officer Gross's testimony, that he in no way, he was obviously standing in the path of the car and did not. Of course, here's what's weird. If you're standing right in front of the car and you probably have a better idea of whether it's trying to run you over or not, and he thought not. If you're coming up behind the car and you see it moving toward your fellow officer, you think he could gun it at any time and kill my fellow officer. Better take action right now. And please understand what might have happened in 100 other situations like this if Officer Oliver had said, oh, this doesn't look that life-threatening to my fellow officer. This doesn't look like a situation where I should discharge my firearm. So I'm just going to chill for a little bit here. Meanwhile, and the driver floors the car and kills the other officer. Are you happy then? There you go. That's what these folks face every day. 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 923.
I climbed across the mountain tops, swam all across the ocean blue, across the
Brandy Carlisle.
Baby, I broke
there is a story.
So it's a couple of years, more than a couple of years ago, I offered up some Brandi Carlile, which I love and which Regina loves, and Rhonda heard it and said, who's that? And so I made a CD of her, of Brandi Carlile's CD, The Story. And it just wrapped around her heart, and it means a lot about family, about kids, about struggle, about this. And so on this particular day, as the Moreland family gets ready to make that drive to Monroe, Louisiana, where Elizabeth begins at University of Louisiana, Monroe. Every time school starts, we always reach out, talk about whether your kids start in 10th grade like Ethan is, whether your kids start in kindergarten like they all do at some point, turn your head and bam, you're dropping them off at college. Well, that's what the Morelands are doing with Elizabeth at Louisiana Monroe this weekend. So I know that's if it's happening with them, it's happening to an enormous number of all of you in 3 years. It'll be happening with us and with Ethan. Oh my gosh, it's an amazing and emotional time, and a time to take stock of what family means, of what parenthood means. And so, and it's funny because when Christian and Molly started their first day of school, it was their first two kid day of school in a long time, because Elizabeth ain't starting, you know, in K through 12 anymore. She's starting college. So for them and for everybody starting college or whatever, and Monday is the first day of school for a whole lot of folks in the K through 12 world. So it's a day to kind of keep all those folks in our hearts and our minds who are starting whatever school adventure may lie ahead. It is 931-866-660-5759. Into the newsroom we go. Here's Gordon Griffin.
The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come.
Every once in a while. Gotta roll out with a little delight. You know why? Do you know why?
Your groove, I do deeply dig.
Because ultimately, groove is in the heart. Right? 866-660-5759. Should we let him get to the hook? Here's what you need to do on October 24th. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what's going to be in our hearts as Election Day draws near. Couple of weeks before the election, as anticipation reaches a fever pitch. All right, enough grooving. Let's groove it a different way. October 24th, the night of October 24th, will be T-minus 13 days to the election, the midterms. Are they a referendum on Trump? You bet they are. So they'd better doggone well go well. And that's up to you, and it's up to me. And I know it's Texas. We're a deep red state. But we need to deliver to Ted Cruz that double digit, or as close as we can get to it, win. Need to make sure that Pete Sessions doesn't even feel Colin Allred's hot breath on his neck in those election results that night. Got to make sure that all, you know, that just we keep things red. We keep our house in order so that the national story can be blue wave denied. But what's going to happen across the landscape of that election? What are the prospects looking like when we're just, I mean, now we're, you know, 80 some days away from the election, when we're 13 days away, when we're less than 2 weeks away on the evening of October 24th, let's put our thumb on the pulse. Let's see what we're thinking. Let's see what people are saying. And let's gather a bunch of talk show hosts live on stage to do it. Join me in Irving at the Irving Arts Center the night of October 24th for the Battleground Talkers Tour. I will welcome Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Larry Elder. We'll have another special seat there for former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, fresh off the book tour, still on the book tour, called The Briefing. And he's got a lot of thoughts about Trump world, about the political world, about the Republican world, because Sean was at the RNC before joining the White House. So all of us will be there on stage, and you will be there to witness the spectacle. Maybe you, before taking your seat, will have been schmoozing backstage with the whole lot of us, getting your copy of Sean's book. We'll make that a freebie for the VIP, but it's $30 just to get into the building, and there are no bad seats at the Irving Arts Center. It's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful night. So all you got to do is get your tickets now. It's 660amtheanswer.com, because the place is going to sell out. The VIP is going to sell out quickly. So let's go. Get on board right now at 660amtheanswer.com. Battleground Talkers. Click on that and get yourself your tickets and bring the family, bring the kids. It's just going to be a great opportunity to take stock of where conservatism seems to be headed, where our results seem to be headed. And after this election, we're going to speculate and see. We're going to look at conservatism in the age of Trump. We're going to take a look and see. We're going to look very short-term future, 13 days to the election. And, of course, couple of years in the future toward the Trump re-election bid of 2020, presuming that happens. And the only reason I attach that qualifier is, there's something I haven't said as much. I think right after he won, for a few months I said, there's something kind of sticking with me here that he may be a one-term president voluntarily, that he may get to the end of that first 4 years and say, Mike Pence, you're awesome. I love you. You've served us bigly. And just hand it over to Mike Pence. You don't hand it over. There would be an actual primary election. And then here comes Ted Cruz. Here comes Marco Rubio. Here comes Carly Fiorina. Here comes whoever else. And that's great. Have you noticed I haven't said that as much lately? You know why? Because I don't believe it as much lately. In an era when everybody seems to be surprised by everything, not much has really surprised me, and I'm not Einstein. I've just come to, I know him. I feel I understand him. Are there moments, are there days where he makes me a little crazy? Yes. But thank God he won. Thank God he won. Thank God he won. And here's the one thing that I would say almost halfway through his first term that I didn't necessarily expect. People said, he's going to hate it. He's going to hate being president. It's a real job. It's drudgery. It's awful. Blah, blah, blah. It'll be hell for him. It'll be terrible. And I never believed that. Never once. But I did find myself thinking that at the end of the first term, he'd be 74 and think, I'm going to go to Mar-a-Lago now. And I've made America sufficiently great again. And I'm going to hand things over to somebody who hopefully will have learned the lesson that doing things my way is a good thing, and they'll go do that. Now, could that still happen? Of course it could. I don't think it's much of a possibility anymore. He loves this. Not only does it not beat him down, not only is it a daily drag, not only is it not a chore, he loves this. He loves the positives of his great results. He loves the uplift of seeing the country become stronger, more prosperous. And I think he loves mixing it up with Jim Acosta, or fill in the blank. He loves yanking the security clearance on John Brennan. And not to be vindictive, but to actually fight back. For years upon years upon years upon years upon years, Republicans we've gotten our teeth kicked in. We've been berated. We've been insulted. We've been attacked. Our politicians have been told that you are racist, you are evil, you are scum. And the usual Republican response is, thank you, sir. May I have another? Those days are gone. And I love it every day. And you know who else loves it every day? President loves it every day. I don't think he has the slightest thought about hitting the golf course every day come January 2021. Nope. Landslide 2020. Let's work toward that. 866-660-5759. So our event a couple of weeks before this election, first things first, before 2020, got to have 2018, got to have our house in order, our ducks in a row. So let's gather. I'll be joined by Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Larry Elder, Sean Spicer. Wow. We're going to talk it up, figure it out, solve the world's problems, see where we are and get everybody stoked for the election 13 days hence. That'll be the evening of October 24th at the Irving Arts Center. Tickets on sale right now at 660amtheanswer.com. All righty. We are in Katy, Texas. Sam, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Just fine, Mark. I was listening to the guy earlier this morning talking about he was concerned about Cruz and the phone calls he's getting.
Yeah.
We were also talking about made-up stuff. Well, I'll tell you, ain't nothing more made-up than Robert O'Rourke becoming Beto.
Well, okay.
Let me tell you something. When I get calls, and I do have a landline at my home, and I get those calls and I answer them, and I get these Beto calls, and I just drive these people crazy because when they say Beto, I say, you mean Robert? You mean Robert? Are you not? His name's not Roberto. It's Robert. After a while, they get upset and hang up.
Well, because so. that's just not. I don't think they're listing you as an undecided voter. All right, I've had two things. Number one, I've had a little bit of fun with this myself. I'll refer to him playfully as Robert every once in a while because that totally is his name. And here's the thing. In all fairness. Is Beto a recent contrivance that he seems to have concocted in order to make himself more politically palatable to voters in El Paso? It seems the answer to that is no. He apparently, first of all, if you're in El Paso and you are enmeshed in a magnitude of Latino culture that may be far greater than almost any other part in the state or even in the country, it appears that it was before kindergarten that the Beto thing started to happen, because Robert Beto is a common Spanish nickname for Roberto. So that apparently kicked in like when he was four. So, you know.
And, but the main thing we also have to remind ourselves is that because the people that are for Cruz are like me, like you, we have jobs. We're busy. We got full lives because we have a job. We need to make the time and make sure friends. We got to take a page from Obama and call our cousin Pookie and get him out to vote.
We got the mobilization of everybody, all hands on deck, on deck. that's the Cincinnati Bengals defensive line job this weekend. All hands on deck is going to be extremely important as we move forward. Nothing taken for granted. Cruz isn't taking it for granted. Took another call. My call of the day from somebody. I don't see enough Cruz signs. I don't see him enough. He was in like McKinney and Arlington the same day. They are not eating bonbons, watching soap operas at Cruz headquarters. Don't sweat it. It's August, and thank you enormously, Sam. Appreciate it. Let's get those the debate thing. Hang on a second. Let me give you the latest on the debate thing, because I will tell you that even when it looked like we had the five debates, right, and they were on the books, right, and then Beto's people. Robert's people said, we haven't agreed to anything. And their charge is that Cruz's people are trying to set the agenda for everything, what city they're in, what the topics are, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny when Senator Cruz told us about this, that we're going to have one in Dallas on some subject, something in I think they're going to do one in McAllen that's about border stuff. Now, do we need two of them along the border? Do we need a McAllen and an El Paso? I don't know, because El Paso is Beto's hometown, but we're doing one in Ted's hometown. That's Houston. But guess what? That's Houston. You need one in Houston. You need one in DFW. So last night, Patrick Svitek at Texas Tribune, there was a Q&A with Beto. And the question was, on the debates, are there any deal breakers at this point for you in terms of things you've been asking for? Anything that if you don't have, you won't participate? And another questioner adds in, one needs to be in El Paso, right? And Beto replies, I would really like to see one in El Paso. I mean, I'm not a deal breaker kind of guy. I believe in the power of consensus and finding a solution. I mean, as you know, Ted Cruz attempted this week to dictate literally every detail of the debate, from the furniture that would be on the stage to the moderator to the topics that would be discussed, and by extension, the topics that would not be discussed, to the dates, to the times, to the locations. And our response is, we're excited to debate. We're really looking forward to it. This needs to be collaborative, and we understand collaboration. Anything of any consequence that we've been able to do in the House over the last 6 years, I've done it by collaborating with Republicans, with Democrats alike. Mm-hmm. It's something we understand. It's something we live. It's something that's allowed to be successful for those we represent. It's the same approach we should bring to the campaign and the terms of these debates. So I'm confident that we'll be able to work it out. Okay, lovely quote. So you know what it's time to do now? Work it out. It is time to work it out. And if the cruise people are saying, let's do it here, 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 with this and this and this and this, and there's some of those elements that you don't like, push back and say, well, let's not do that. How about this? Let's get to it. Let's get those debates on the schedule and ready to roll. I will tell you one thing. The idea of like five debates all on an individual subject, not my favorite thing. Maybe two or three. I mean, I don't know if I need all five debates to be wide open, freewheeling about anything, but those are my favorite debates. Because what if there's some huge news story? Well, this one coming up is about the economy. But what if something huge happens on some other issue? So that's just me. But I do talk shows for a living. And since I do, let me scoot because it's time for this one to roll. I'm Mark Davis, 660 AM The Answer. I got a couple of other final thoughts for you when we roll out next. So we learned just over 24 hours ago about the death of Aretha Franklin. We sprinkled a couple of Aretha. We went full Aretha for the last hour yesterday, and I've thrown down a couple more today. So as we bring the week to a close, go back to 1967. It was her 11th album, even at that time, called I'll Never Love a Man the Way I Love You, which is, by the way, one of her greatest records ever, the title track. And Aretha did Sam Cooke's Change Is Gonna Come. Seemed appropriate. Somebody put up on social media, wouldn't it have been nice if Aretha had seen like full racial reconciliation in America? And I thought, excuse me? She was born in 1942, a time of stone cold segregation. We didn't have the Civil Rights Act until she was 22. She sang at Dr. King's funeral and then saw as the 70s turned into the 80s, the 90s, and now one of the biggest, fastest social changes ever. Did we achieve perfection? No. But a whole lot of change came during Aretha's magnificent life. So God bless our country, our troops, and our families. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland, technical guru and our inspiration, Shane Bell, news ace, Gordon Griffin, we all wish you a great weekend. See you on Monday at 7 on 660 AM The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.